We are going to continue our series of resilience today. Let me just make an adjustment to my view here so that I can see you all better. Okay, good. If you recall, the last time we met, it was just before Christmas, and we talked about how we have a tendency to turn on ourselves when challenge arises. Do you remember that? How many of us right now are looking at the last year and saying to ourselves, I had all of that time and I never learned to play the banjo. Or I was going to do exercise. What's my excuse? You know, we have, when something hard comes up, it's like the first thing we do is turn on ourselves. And last time we met, we talked about some ways that we can take care of ourselves, looking after our bodies, looking after our mental and emotional state, and staying connected with other people. And I do want to just check in really quick how that sort of season between just before Christmas and just after New Year's, were you all able, I mean, obviously you survived it because you're here, but were you all able to remember to take care of yourself and stay connected to people that were healthy for you and get enough sleep and all of that stuff? Yeah, I see, Sean, you're not looking quite so certain, but it is a training. and of course, I also don't want to suggest that we're not allowed to splurge. You know, I stayed up all night on New Year's and I drank a lot of champagne, but I made the choice to do that. And that's the difference. You know, if you want to choose to not connect with people for a while or choose to stuff your face, so long as you're making that as a conscious choice, that's totally fine. So today we're going to continue on that theme of self-care by looking at some self-compassion internally. So last time was, what can we do externally to help ourselves, take care of ourselves? But today I want to address when that internal attack happens, how can we deal with that? And I want to preface this by saying that a lot, I would say most, 90% of what I'm going to say today is based on Tara Brach, who you may have heard of. She's a mindfulness teacher, and she has come up with some excellent processes that we're going to be looking at tonight. Tara has this phrase that she uses. She calls it the trance of unworthiness. And this is how she refers to the fact that we frequently turn on ourselves. We have this belief that we are insufficient in some way. I mean, each of us will. And actually, I should be clear, some of us maybe don't, which is great, but it's extremely common for people to have a sense that they are in some way insufficient. And that would be different for everyone. You know, it's the, what do they call it? Imposter syndrome that comes up sometimes when I'm going to teach. Or it's the shape of my body and the amount of weight I put on in the past year.
What's the phrase? What of unworthiness?
The trance, like, yeah, it took me a few times to hear that in her talk, the trance of unworthiness. Was that a good imitation of a trance?
You're in a trance.
You know, so it might be there's something wrong with my body, or I'm never going to get this right, or I'm always going to be an angry person or whatever. We have a tendency to look at ourselves as somehow deficient. And additionally, to look at specific things as deficient. You know, I really should have eaten better over the past year. That sounds logical, but that's really an attack on myself. I was dealing with a lot of stress, as we all were. But those sorts of things come up. And according to Tara, in her experience with all her, I don't know how many hundreds of students, she says this is becoming epidemic, this trance of unworthiness. It's everywhere. Everyone's got it, at least in her circle. And I would say in the Western world, that's probably true. So what are we going to do about it? There are things we can do about it. There are ways that we can come to trust our own heart, our own intention, our own goodness. And to recognize that we might have done things differently, but that does not make us somehow unworthy or insufficient. And the way we do this is that we have to be honest with ourselves. We have to have direct contact with whatever that vulnerability is that comes up. It's just not just a matter of ignoring it and pressing on. And that might be a way to deal with something, some emotional internal attack in the moment, if you have to just get through some event. But in order to really deal with this, this sense of attacking ourselves. And I'm not going to say it's only unworthiness. I mean, that's common, but many different ways that we turn on ourselves. We've got to experience that directly and work with it directly. We have to actively care for ourselves in that way. So tonight we're going to look at one specific way of doing that. Of course, there are many ways, and the situation could be very broad, with a lifelong belief in my unworthiness. It could be very specific in kicking myself for not having learned the banjo, which really was an intention. I took a few lessons a few years ago and have been telling myself ever since, it'd be easy, 10 minutes a day, you can do it. I didn't do it. You know, that's not crippling, but that's still turning on myself. So some of the signs that we are turning on ourselves in that way would be the inner critic is an obvious one. That voice that is telling us all the things we did wrong. A sense of shame. We shouldn't be feeling shame. Even if we've done something inappropriate, shame is a trigger to tell us, a signal to tell us to look at what we've done. But we shouldn't be living with constant shame. Or fear. Sometimes fear is totally appropriate. A dangerous thing is going on. We probably all experienced a little fear yesterday. But if we live in fear, I'm afraid to go out, I'm afraid to speak because I'm going to say the wrong thing or because I'm going to offend somebody, I'm afraid to do something because I'm going to fail. That's an indication that we might be in this trance of unworthiness. Anxiety, similar to the fear, and again, I'm not being absolute. There are anxiety disorders that have chemical causes or other causes, traumatic causes, genetic causes. But there is also anxiety that is caused by my own sense of self-worth or my own sense of having screwed up, you know, in the smaller smaller cosm, what's that word? Microcosm. And then there's, on top of that, the self-judgment because of any of the above, right? There's, I shouldn't be complaining that I didn't learn banjo. What a petty thing to complain about when so many people died. you know, right there, I'm attacking myself, and then I'm attacking myself for attacking myself. So, you know, those are just some indications. I don't know if, you know, anything pops into your mind of other indications that you might want to stop and consider if there's a need for self-compassion inside. Nothing coming to mind. I think we often know. You can have a feeling when something just feels like, you know, I'm not being kind to myself. You know. So what we're going to do to work with these is to turn toward these feelings. And it might be the general thing, the general fear, or it might be the specific instance of, I shouldn't be complaining about my weight. You know, we can turn to whatever we're going to choose to work with, we're going to turn toward it and comfort it and be there like you would with a frightened child or a dear friend. Experience that experience, not denying that it's there, not trying to push it away, but welcoming it and giving it whatever it needs so that it can dissipate. So that makes sense so far? Okay, one more sip of coffee. So, Tara Brach has come up with this acronym. You might have heard of it. It's RAIN, R-A-I-N. But it's often taught in a more general sense, and she's come up with it to use it specifically for self-compassion. Is anyone else familiar with RAIN already? Do you remember, Sean, what those stand for? I can never remember myself with the general one. Oh, she's going to look it up in her journal.
I have no memory, but we were just talking about this in a book club with Ruth King's book.
Uh-huh.
She will tell me what it was.
No, that's fine.
You'd think I could remember these things, but
there's so many acronyms.
All right. Recognize, allow, investigate, and non-identification. Sometimes okay. People call non-identification nurture.
Okay, great. So, yes, we're going to call it nurture. And I'm going to go through each of those things. And tonight we're going to be focusing specifically on the self-compassion. But it's also a great way to approach anything that comes up. So RAIN, the first letter R is for recognize, recognizing what's going on in our internal experience. A is allow the experience to be there. And of course, I'm going to go over all of these in detail. I is investigate the experience with interest and care. And
with interest and what?
Care. That you care about it.
Oh, and care.
Right. And N is nurture the experience with self-compassion. So recognize. What is recognize? Well, recognize is, first of all, being aware that there is some experience here of unkindness to yourself. And maybe that's not the right phrase, because if you're feeling that, if you're in that trance of unworthiness, you're not going to think it's unkind, you're just going to think it's realistic. But you, if you notice that there's some some of these things, negative talk, fear of what other people are going to think, kicking yourself over something. And that's a big one for me. If I notice myself kicking myself, that I should have done this, I should have done that. So notice that that's there. And then notice that that's a sensory experience. So it involves thoughts. Often it will be memories or anticipatory fantasy. Like, I'm not going to try and cook that because I know it's not going to work. And or, you know, the shame maybe comes up whenever you think about this thing you said in a meeting. Funny that I should say that, because there's actually a couple of meetings I have that I still remember from about 15 years ago when I said something that makes me cringe. So it's you've got the visual and the auditory thinking aspect, and then you're going to have a body sensation that goes with it. I should say you may or may not have a body sensation, but the more you work with this, the more you'll notice that even if there's nothing obvious, there's often very subtle body sensation. So R is for recognizing that there's something there, and then recognizing the parts of it, recognizing that it is a sensory experience. Yes, Sean.
So in unified mindfulness world, is this noting and labeling?
Ah, great question. In unified mindfulness, this would be see, hear, feel, in. Noting and labeling is one way to notice what's going on. And in fact, that is the way we're going to be doing it tonight. But if you're working in a different tradition, it could just be sitting with it or visualizing or something. But yes. So noticing that there's something up, noticing the elements of it, and if possible, dividing it into the elements so that you can clearly see what that experience is comprised of. And being able to see those elements will let you take a little step back from it as we go into the next steps. So recognize makes sense to everybody. Okay, allow is what I call equanimity, of course. It's allowing the sensory experience to be there without trying to change it. So I feel myself kicking myself over not having learned the banjo. The first thing I do is to allow that feeling to be there in my body, in my mind, without immediately saying, no, 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 it's not a big deal, don't worry about it. Or without saying, you shouldn't be thinking that. Or without pushing away the unpleasant sensation that is way too big for the triviality of the concern. You know, none of that analysis, none of that action we want to take right now. We're just going to allow the sensation to be there as much as possible, not fighting it, but also not wallowing in it. We're trying to observe it, to look at it, to see what it's doing, but not to dive in and you know, allow ourselves to be taken over by it. Trying not to judge ourself or the experience. And here's an important thing, is consciously not agreeing with what's going on inside. So if we're working with the inner critic, and the inner critic is saying, you know, of course you're afraid to cook. You're never going to be able to cook. It's perfectly logical. You know, don't agree with that. Don't say, yeah, okay, I guess you're right. You know, my mom never taught me how to cook, so it makes sense that I'll never know how to cook. Don't agree with that. At this point, don't disagree with it. Just listen to it. Notice, okay, so that's what this voice is saying to me. Okay. And also allow it to change. When we put our attention on internal experience, it can sometimes become more intense. because we become so good at sort of suppressing it in our daily lives that when we actually turn to look at it, it's there in its full glory. So if the experience becomes more unpleasant, more intense, that's okay, as long as you can continue to look at it without jumping into it, without agreeing with it. I want to say at this point, if anything related to trauma or PTSD or something like that were to come up, don't push it. You know, I'm not suggesting that you allow yourself to become re-traumatized. And I'm going to trust each of you to make that decision yourself. But as long as you're working with something that is not going to cause you to, you know, spin out in some way, allow it to increase or allow it to change and move. Allow the discussion. You know, if your inner critic says, oh, I see what you're doing, but it's never going to work, just allow it to go there. Right? Even if it's like watching a child. Okay, you've got an upset child, and you might turn to it, and it sees it's got some attention, and so it gets even more upset. That's okay, let it do that, but do it back from the position of observing it. So allowing makes sense to everybody? Are there any questions there? Okay. So I is for investigate. And this is where you're becoming specifically about self-compassion. And Sean, this might be a little bit more specific than the general brain. But we're dealing with ways that we are turning on ourselves. And what we're going to do with investigation is investigate with care. As you would a child, you wouldn't shake it and say, what's wrong? Why are you like this? You know, you're going to sit down and chat with it or sit with it. So we're going to, with care, investigate what are the parts of you that are in need and what are those needs? What what are the causes that have led to these conditions? What can reduce the upset in this inner body. Bear in mind that we're doing this because we want to find out what's true. So this can be challenging because we might not want to look at it. But the not wanting to look at it is often tied in with the fact that we're attacking ourselves, right? So if your inner critic is telling you lies and you want to find out about that, your inner critic might make things worse and say, you don't want to go there, you know, and make you afraid to continue because you're going to find out it's telling you lies. So we want to know the truth. But we also don't want to judge ourselves. We want to, it's like we're creating a safe space for our inner self, our inner child, or our inner voice, our inner fears. We're creating a safe space and inviting it in to the room to be part of a discussion. So we're really going to, we're not going to turn on the turning on ourselves, right? That's important, to allow it to come in. Then have the discussion. You know, ask the experience. In whatever way that is, it might be for you that you're actually going to have an internal dialogue. You might just be sitting with it. You might be visualizing you know, what images come to mind when you're working with this fear or with this anger or whatever. Ask the experience what wants attention. What is it that wants attention? What does this vulnerability or this insecurity or this fear, what does it need? What would make it feel better? And what beliefs are being expressed here? Beliefs about yourself, you know, I'll never be any good, or I'm just a whatever person. Are there beliefs there that you hold that are being expressed? Are there beliefs about your surroundings? You know, so-and-so thinks that I'm stupid, so now I'm afraid to open my mouth. Or your whole situation. You know, the world is out to get me. There's nothing I can do. Are there any beliefs there? So what is it that this particular vulnerability needs? And are there any beliefs attached to it? Does that make some sense? So once you've done that, then give yourself what you need. Last time we talked about doing that externally. You know, do you need to talk to someone? Do you need to go for a walk? This time we're looking inside. We're having this conversation, and it's like, okay, does this insecurity need reassurance? Do I need to tell myself it's okay? It's okay to be afraid, but I'm here with you. We'll do this together. Does it need forgiveness? You know, I'm sorry that I've been so angry at you for not picking up that banjo. Or do you need to forgive something? I'm sorry that I said that thing. Yeah, that was a silly thing to say. I'm sorry. But I forgive you. You know, we're talking to ourselves here, so the back and forth conversation is I and I. So I'm sorry I said this thing, and that's okay. I forgive you. Right? So, or maybe it's just love. I love you. It's okay. I love you. Or attention. I'm listening to you. Just tell me whatever you need, and allow the dialogue to happen. Right? So you speak to yourself, maybe that changes the feelings a little bit. See where that goes and see what that needs. Be honest. You know, maybe the answer is, you know, I'm sorry, I just can't forgive myself right now. Well, can you forgive yourself for not being able to forgive yourself? You know, don't just tell yourself platitudes. You might do that with a child. It'll be okay. Don't worry. It'll all be okay. Maybe you really don't believe it'll be okay the way you want it to be. Maybe dialogue has to change to, I know this is going to suck, but we're going to make it through. Right? So be honest in your conversation and allow the conversation to evolve. And you may want to use some visualization. Imagine yourself hugging the child or comforting the emotion, or maybe it helps to imagine a comforting light or whatever you know, works with your inner self to bring comfort to yourself. And this may go back and forth for a while. This may just be one moment. This may have immediate effects. You may immediately feel better, and you may not. But notice how you feel after you've done the exercise. Notice if anything has changed. Rest in anything that has changed. Continue to not judge yourself. And remember that this is not a one-off experience. Okay, this is ongoing. This is it takes time. You know, So, like I say, sometimes it works immediately and it's great. But the more you do this, like anything else that I've been teaching, the more you do it, the more you learn it, the more naturally it comes. And it'll start applying itself when you get into these trance of unworthiness situations. But it could be a long road. So don't be discouraged if you don't immediately feel better. And don't quit if you do. Remember this for next time and do it again. You can also do it prophylactically. You know, you don't have to be feeling bad to notice what's going on and encourage yourself. So that is rain. And afterwards, after you've done it, you can move on, or you can do it again if you feel like you want to. And that's essentially the technique that I wanted to talk about. Once we start working with this self-attack, I know that's a strong word, but it really does seem like we can turn on ourselves at the worst possible times. But we need to take care of ourselves externally and internally. And once we've got excuse me, once we've got that ball rolling, then we can start looking at bigger interactive pictures of how resilience works. Sorry, I think I just inhaled the cat hair. So next week we're going to start looking at some other things, like what are our values and how do we live according to them. But first I wanted to get us well established in this very deep work of self-compassion and caring for ourselves in every way.